Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
This is Newsroom Robots, the podcast where we explore the intersection of artificial intelligence and the news industry. I'm Nikita Roy, data scientist, media entrepreneur, and one of the many founders currently building their ventures at the Harvard Innovation Labs. On the Newsroom Robots, I'm excited to bring you insightful conversations with industry experts about how AI is impacting the way we do journalism. Joining me today is Ryan Serpico, Hearst Newspaper's first AI and automation engineer, where he takes advantage of the latest developments in generative AI to empower journalists at Hearst Newspaper's local newsrooms across the U.S. Prior to moving into this role, he was a graphics reporter at the San Antonio Express News. In today's episode, Ryan discusses how he built out the first generative AI tool that is being rolled out across local newsrooms at Hearst Newspapers. Hi, Ryan. Welcome to Newsroom Robots. You're our first AI engineer on the podcast, so I'm really excited to get a bit technical today on the show.
I'm really excited to be here. You know, like, I really do wish I had this podcast a year ago, because for the past week, I've been binging the episodes you've had out so far, and it's been real insightful. Like, every guest that you've had come on here have been very, very insightful.
Oh, that's so kind. Thanks, Ryan. So I really want to start off with setting the context for our listeners. You are Hearst Newspaper's first AI and automation engineer. It's just been a month now since we are recording this interview, since you've got that new position. And you were on the editorial side as a graphics reporter for the San Antonio Express. And you did your bachelor's in journalism, so it's not that typical kind of tech journey that everyone has. And so I'd love to start off by hearing your story. Like, can you walk us through that career transition you've had and how you've ended up developing cutting-edge AI solutions for Hearst?
Yeah, it really started last summer, like almost exactly a year ago. It was early June. I was coming back from visiting my family back in Florida, and I decided to pop in my AirPods into my ear and listen to this new episode of this podcast, this other podcast I listened to called Plain English, and hosted by Derek Thompson. And he was interviewing this technologist named Stephen Johnson, and they were discussing the current state of GPT-3. And, you know, this is like months and months and months before ChatGPT, when this became more mainstream. But as I was on the plane, and like, I can't do anything else because I had my phone on airplane mode, so my full attention was on this podcast, and like, they were explaining what you could do with GPT-3. Like, you could have it explain the Big Bang, explain the Big Bang as if I'm a second grader. And I was just like floored. I was blown away by all the use cases for it. And I decided, you know, once I'd land, I'd go to a coffee shop here back here in San Antonio and like sit down and like learn how to, you know, prompt it, and went to OpenAI's playground, prompted it, got a response back. I was like, cool, okay. And then I thought to myself, okay, how do I do this programmatically? And I was able to figure that out in like 20, 30 minutes using Python. And then I was like, okay, now how can I apply this to the San Antonio Express News? Because everything that GPT-3 is about, or was about at the time, was about text. And the San Antonio Express News' whole product is text. So there had to be like, you know, applications here. And this was like a Saturday afternoon, and I was looking at our homepage. And on our homepage, like a lot of other media outlets, we use Chartbeat. And we use headline testing to see what headlines could increase our click-through rates for our stories. And on this particular Saturday, there were no headline tests being run. And, you know, that's like a bummer. That's like a missed opportunity. But it's hard to blame digital producers. Digital producers are the folks who run our homepages and do the headline testing. But they have a lot of going on. I was actually a digital producer for the first year and a half, 2 years that I was at the San Antonio Express News. They have a lot of stuff going on. Like, they're not just managing the homepage, they're packaging stories, they're compiling newsletters, they're like working on their own stories. They have a lot going on. So I thought to myself, okay, how could I use GPT-3 to, you know, help out producers scale up their work? And, you know, I crudely just clicked into a story, it was about like this new pizza shop opening up. I grabbed a blob of text, threw it into GPT-3's playground and said, give me 5 alternative headlines for this story. And it spat it out. And I was like, bingo, we have a use case for a media outlet. And then like, that was kind of like the beginnings of how I got here. And it's really framed how I view the use, like the best uses of the GPT-3, GPT-3.5, and so on and so forth. It's like a bicycle for the mind. It enhances our abilities beyond what we could do just like on our own. But I can talk a little bit more about that later on.
Yeah, I want to delve more into that kind of like product. So you found the problem. You found that the problem was that digital producers have too much going on their plate. So you wanted to help them out with headlines. And how are you kind of like, how did you build out that product? And what stage is it currently at?
Currently, we are actually, like, I want to stress this, we are still in the training phase. Like, we've built it out, we sent it to our legal department, and we're currently in the training phase, and we hope to be done with that by the end of the month. But when it comes to, like, the build out of it, like, it took a while, because for 90% of my time building this tool, I was a graphics reporter at the Express News. So, like, while I was trying to report stories affecting the San Antonio area, I was trying to like, you know, squeeze in a little time here, a little time there on the weekends to build it out. But it was frustrating at times, but it was kind of like a blessing in disguise, because it allowed me to see like how other media outlets around the world were trying to use GPT-3. And it informed me to see, it showed me how to not go about doing building a tool like this. So you obviously, I know on a previous podcast, one of your guests brought up the CNET fiasco where they published 70 personal finance articles that were like riddled with fact errors. And, you know, I was like, okay, how can we like avoid that? And I should say that this bot that I've created, this tool, operates entirely in our Slack workspace. So I was like, how can we avoid what happened to CNET? And that informed me to like go ahead and make sure that like these are all public conversations. Like it's not like ChatGPT where it's a one-to-one conversation. Anything you ask of our bot is going to be viewable by everybody else in that market. So, and I like I said, I could go in more in depth into that later on when it comes to the rules. But just all that time I had to like learn from others' mistakes definitely informed how I built out my tool.
And like, yeah, let's delve into the tool specifically. So is it that the newsrooms can just put in an article right now into like Slack and they could get a headline generated? And is that how you're visualizing and like, how are you seeing the impact of this project?
Yeah, so the tool is called Producer P. We don't need it. The name is inspired by like a silly basketball nickname. But the tool is called Producer P. And the way it works is that if you're a digital producer, a reporter, an editor, or whatever in a market, you can, as long as you go through the training, I should say that, like, you're not allowed into any of these channels without a training. You go into the channel and you can either you can make use of like several different commands that I've created for it. The most popular one I expect to be, that I anticipate that most folks to use, is called the produce command. And you can go in there into this Slack channel and post either a link to a story or paste the text of the story directly into the chat and do --produce. And in about 10 seconds, it will generate three SEO keywords, three SEO headlines, three SEO URLs, suggested push alert, and 10 related links that it got from Google based off of the SEO keywords. And then we, in these trainings, we're stressing to producers, reporters, editors, and beyond, you know, these are not end-all, be-all solutions. Like, part of the reason why Producer P is in a Slack channel and not directly integrated with our CMS is that I wanted that added friction to this tool, because I really am trying to encourage our reporters to like think critically. It's not like a calculator. When it says 2 + 2 = 4, you know that it equals 4. I try to stress to them that you are still smarter than a large language model. You're still smarter than generative AI. So we kind of like follow that sandwich framework where you have a story, you paste it into the chat, and then it gives you a menu of options to choose from. And then it's on you, the onus is on you to go ahead and tweak those headlines, tweak those URLs. What this really does is it just kind of gives you a way to see a story from 5 different angles at once. And it allows you to scale up your work so that you're not on your own. You don't suffer from the blank page syndrome or writer's block or whatever. It's really meant to just scale up your work, not like replace your own judgment, your own news judgment.
Yeah. And so is that Slack channel that you're saying that's public for everyone in that Slack channel to kind of be able to see how people are using the tool and learn from that? Is that how it's operating?
Yeah. Yeah. Everybody, it's open to everybody. I should just go ahead and explain my 3 rules. I kind of like based off of Isaac Asimov's 3 rules of robotics. But rule number 1 is a human must be in the loop at all times. Rule number 2 is you must only use these tools, create tools that summarize, remix, aggregate existing information. And then rule number 3 is you need to be radically transparent, not just to readers, but to each other in the newsroom. Because one of the biggest takeaways from the CNET fiasco is that when staffers over there spoke to The Verge, they said that they had no idea what was being posted or being written by their fellow coworkers and what was being written by their AI. So I really wanted to tackle that head on by giving us this public venue, like where everybody can see what everybody's doing and everybody can police each other. And we're doing that, like I said, on a market by market basis.
Yeah. And I want to delve into the training. So that's very interesting. Before any journalist can use this tool, you make them go through a training. What does that look like and what does it consist of?
Yeah. So there are 3 things I wanted folks to get out of these trainings. Like, I want them to learn how to use Producer P technically, like how to go like access the channel and like the commands that are available to them and the best practices. And like on the best practices front, I want them to, you know, understand how to use it effectively. I don't want them to come into it with like unrealistic expectations, or I don't want them to come away from it being frustrated or confused by its output. So I walk them through the best practices of how to use it. But the most important thing is like how to use Producer P responsibly. And that kind of leads into the rest of the presentation. Like, honestly, only 20% of the presentation is like how to use Producer P. 80% of it is like how to understand generative AI at large. Because I'm still close with a lot of the reporters here and editors here at in San Antonio. And it just seems like folks don't really understand how large language models work. They don't understand that it's really just autocomplete on steroids. The way I've been explaining it to folks in the presentation and like, you know, just at when I'm at a bar with a coworker is I'm honestly lifting this research paper that came out back in, I think, 2020 by this one professor. I believe her name is Emily Bender. And she came out with this research paper that described large language models as stochastic parrots. And, you know, like when I explain to my coworkers, like what that means, I don't actually like include the word stochastic because I feel like that's intimidating. So I just explain to them that like, I tell them like, think of it less like the Terminator. Like I'm trying to shake it like this decades of Hollywood movies. Like I'm trying to shake these cognitive biases out of them. And I tell them, like, stop thinking of them as the Terminator. Think of them as just like parents. Because when you're in a room with a parent, because we all find ourselves in a room with a parent at one point or another in our lives. When you're in a room with a parent and it says something in English, you don't think that the parent actually understands what it's saying. The same thing is going on here with generative AI, with large language models. All they're doing, like with parrots, they are just mimicking what they hear in their nearby environment. With large language models, they are just parrots with a computer in the brain that has like the entire internet, for the most part, up until 2021, lodged in their brains. And they're just repeating what they've heard or seen on the internet based off of their training data set. And all they're doing is picking the next most likely set of words that it, I don't want to say think, but it predicts will occur based off of that training data. So a lot of this training is just trying to show our reporters and editors how this works. And because of how it works, it informs like its limitations, such as like it doesn't understand current events. So if you come to it thinking it's going to, like if you go to a ChatGPT, if you leave Producer P and its channels and you go directly to ChatGPT, it won't understand current events. If you plop in a URL in there and it gives you like a summary of an article, it's just, it's not actually reading the article. It's not connected to the internet unless you use one of the ChatGPT plugins. But yeah, no, it's just a lot of it is just trying to show our reporters and editors, our newsrooms, how this works and the limitations. I honestly try to be a Debbie Downer for our newsrooms. But then I wrap it up by explaining, like saying like, okay, well, why are we using this? And I explained to them what I said earlier about our approach of like, this is a bicycle for the mind. And we have these three rules that we're trying to use to mitigate the potential risks. And my final slide just tells our newsrooms, like, don't undervalue your abilities. Don't overvalue the AIs.
Wow. And what's the response been from the newsrooms using these tools?
Well, so we've only trained one newsroom so far, and it was like my home team here in San Antonio at the Express News. But in the past week, it's been fairly positive. Like they've been loving it. And so far they've been heeding my warnings about like, don't use like its output, like literally, like use it as inspiration, using it as a starting point. It seems like they've taken that to heart. And yeah, like I've been blown away with their response so far.
Yeah. And what kind of like challenges did you face when you were building out this product? Because now, as I understand it, it's like a GPT-3 API written on top of like Python that creates an app for Slack. And like, how did you go about building that out? And like, what challenges did you see when you were creating it?
Creating it? Well, just like, it's kind of what I've been saying about how do you avoid like these risks of people just blindly copy and pasting its completions into our.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
CMS or into our headline testing. That honestly was the biggest struggle or biggest concern for me and how to communicate like its limitations. I'm much more concerned about that than any of the technical issues that like hit me during the development process.
So I kind of like want to step back because you've developed everything in Python. You've been coding, but you did your bachelor's in journalism. So like, was this something you picked up? Like, how did you move to the technical side of the newsroom?
Yeah, well, going back to my time at the University of Florida, when I first entered the J School over there, I had fully planned on becoming a technology reporter in Silicon Valley. From a young age, I've always been fascinated with technology. Back in high school folks called me like Steve Jobs reincarnate because I carried around his biography, like that giant white book, for my entire junior year of high school. So I've just always been fascinated with technology. And when I entered the J school, I was going down the staircase of Weimar Hall, and I came across this flyer that was advertising this course that was specifically designed for journalism students that taught them how to code. And I thought to myself, hey, well, I mean, I guess I think it would be like a good idea to learn how the sausage is made, of how like software is made, because I thought it would inform my reporting. And then like one thing led to another, and I just wound up writing more code than prose while I was at the University of Florida. And then like fast forward to 2020, I got a job as a digital reporter or a digital producer, where like my responsibilities were just to, you know, manage the homepage and maybe send out some social media posts. But I was hired in March of 2020, like right at the get-go of COVID. And I saw that our producers every night were taking our local COVID data and like downloading it and like writing some functions on it to like clean it up a little bit, and then like uploading it. And like it's like this whole process. And I was like, I think that COVID's going to last a while, and I don't want to do this every day. So I went ahead and like, this was like my first or second week. I was like, I'm just going to write a bot that does the whole shebang for us. I'm just going to like have it like pull the data, clean it up, and upload it into a data wrapper graphic that automatically updates every night. And that kind of created the framework for that, led me to where I am today at the Hearst DevHub. And that's what my whole job is about now, is creating these tools that take advantage of the latest advancements in generative AI and automation technology to not replace, as I have to constantly remind our newsrooms, like not replace anyone, but to like empower producers and reporters and editors in our local newsrooms across the country.
And like, what resources really do you kind of like look to kind of stay on top of this like ever evolving AI world and just like help you develop technically?
Yeah, so I think it's funny how I keep up to date with the latest updates in generative AI. I use a 24-year-old technology called RSS. I'm a huge fan of RSS. It's how, like, I'm sure many of your listeners are receiving this podcast right now, unless they're listening to it on Spotify. Yeah, no, I love RSS. I use it for news, but I also use it for AI, you know, and I just subscribe to, like, anytime I come across an interesting blog or newsletter or forum that touches on generative AI, I subscribe to it instantly, and I just, like, keep it in my RSS reader, and as they come in, I jump on it. Like some of my favorite examples is Simon Willison's blog. He's an open source developer that has done like great writing and like aggregating of like AI news. I follow the AI Snake Oil newsletter that shows, you know, like how various outlets are not using generative AI appropriately, and I find that it informs my thinking. And then there's this like great website called emergentmind.com. And their whole thing is just generative AI news. It's kind of like a Hacker News, if your listeners are familiar with it. It's kind of like Hacker News, but for specifically just generative AI. And I find that to be like a great snapshot every day of what everybody is talking about in the generative AI world.
Yeah. And I'm kind of interested more in like what real potential applications do you see going forward for generative AI? Like, you found that one solution. What other ways do you think generative AI can impact the media industry?
I think that I've actually been using generative AI more than a year. Like, it goes back before June of last summer. At the beginning of 2022, I saw GitHub put out a blog post about this experimental tool called GitHub Copilot. And I downloaded it. I was like, okay, this is pretty neat. But like, as time went on, I was like, oh my God, this is like incredible. And
could you just explain GitHub Copilot for our listeners?
Yeah, no. So yeah, it's like ChatGPT, but entirely for like programming, for coding. And like, it's more than just autocomplete. Like, oftentimes when I show this to like a data reporter or like a reporter who works in one of our newsrooms, Copilot, they're often like, oh, so this is just like, you know, like autocomplete. But then I show them that you can like actually in a comment, like in a Python comment or a JavaScript comment, you can go ahead and say like, I want a function that does this and this and returns this. And it does it. And it like references like the code that you already have in your Python file, JavaScript file, or whatever. And, you know, I know Python, like before Copilot came out, I've been like using Python, writing Python for like 3 or 4 years. But what I found was that it felt so empowering. It made me, like the words of Simon Willison, it like made me feel a little bit more ambitious with the sort of things that I can do. And I think that in that lies like a potential opportunity for a lot of local newsrooms across the country that aren't like, you know, Hearst newspaper, like they're an independent paper or like a nonprofit, like a small paper where there's only one person who knows how to code. And that, and like, that's a, like, we, you know, lonely coders, it's rough. So what I think is great about Copilot is it almost lets you punch above your weight. And it could be like this equalizing force for these local newsrooms around the country, you know, like as long as you know, like the bare minimum of coding, like you could just, if you want to scrape government website, but you're not exactly sure how to, you could just like go into Copilot or even ChatGPT and give it like the HTML and you could ask it, like not just like just blindly do it. You could have it explain to you how to go about doing it. And of course, if you want to make it easier, you could ask it to like take on the persona of like Michael Scott from The Office to like explain it to you and make reference to The Office. I find that to be like a helpful way of doing things. So it's like, I think that Copilot and ChatGPT, like, it's not just for blindly getting like responses back. I found it to be like a great educational tool and a springboard for more research after the fact. I oftentimes with both my coding projects and previously with my reporting projects going to ChatGPT and asking it to be to help me do a pre-mortem for a project instead of a post-mortem. So I could see like all the potential hurdles that might lie ahead of me. So I can like be mindful of them and address them as I go along. So yeah, no, I think for building out tools like Producer P, it's like excellent. And I think that for reporting, I think like data reporting, I think it has a lot of potential there. Like I always say to my coworkers, Python plus VS Code plus Jupyter Notebooks plus GitHub Copilot is just like magical, because in a way you can actually like interview your data using natural language. Of course, like, you know, you need to like go ahead and like fact check it, but it just makes it like really, it's like way faster to like interview your data, like to do data analysis in a Jupyter Notebook with the help of GitHub Copilot to interview your data and get quick insights.
Yeah. And I want to get into like the prompting aspect, because that's super important when you're building this out, even like GitHub Copilot, ChatGPT, getting them to do exactly what you want to do. So do you have any like tips or insights in terms of like how you have been approaching that?
Yeah, no, I mean, like you can start out by saying, well, we could use an example I used the other day. It's not like, you know, for reporting or anything. One of my coworkers who I believe he lives in Oakland, but he every week goes to this like trivia night. And at this trivia night, they a week in out in advance, they actually give out the topic of like what the trivia is all it's going to be entirely about. And he said that in a Slack message to me, he said that he was trying to get ChatGPT to, you know, like help him solve it, because they scramble the topic, I should say. They scramble like the topic name. And he was trying to see if ChatGPT could go ahead and unscramble the words for him. And it wasn't working for him. So he asked if I could create a prompt for him. And I feel like there's just like some rules of thumb, you know, when you're designing a prompt. Like the most important thing to me is to give it like plenty of examples. This is called few shot prompting, because it gives something, it gives ChatGPT something to infer from rather than trying to do it blindly. And you could also, it's also good to define like exactly what output you're looking for. Because if you just ask it to like unscramble these words, it's going to try to like explain everything, like explain why it's doing what it's doing. But it's like good to inform it, like, I only want you to like give me the topic, nothing else, and directing it to not repeat. Like if there's only one letter E in it, only produce just one letter or just one E in the output. So giving it examples to work from, tantamount, giving it like the expected output that you want to see out of it is important. Giving it context, giving it constraints, just like those are the rules of thumb, I think, for when it comes to giving it a good prompt. There's also, you know, chain of reasoning prompt where you could like write out, like give an example of like a type of answer you want to get out of it, but just like your chain of thought. So like if you're giving it a math problem, like explicitly giving an example of like your reasoning to so that it follows you, your reasoning in its answer, that's a good, another good example.
Yeah. And I kind of want to get your insights in terms of like for journalists who maybe like you have a bit of experience with coding or are looking to wanting to learn coding. What kind of languages or tools do you recommend that they kind of focus on right now so that they can upskill themselves?
So I'm like a Python head. I don't like any other language. Like I've always just been like, so I'm probably biased here to say like, you know, Python is, I think the most friendly language out there. And there's so, it's the one of the most popular. Yeah, no, this isn't a controversial statement. It's like always like at the top, like five, I think, in Stack Overflow's surveys each year. So that, and then also just like, honestly, spending a lot of time with Copilot, like download Copilot. I think it's free for a certain set of time. If you're a student, you know, don't tell your professors, but it's free. Get up Copilot. So just like getting in there and like it's always been hard for me, honestly, to explain to my coworkers like the benefit, because again, they all just think that it's like just Copilot or autocomplete on steroids. But like you really need to like experiment and noodle with it on your own to see what you can do with it. Like just install it and just start a project like you normally would, and then just start writing comments in English, natural language, to start learning how to use it. And I promise in time, you'll see the magic that lies within.
Yeah. And so I just want to like kind of like wrap things up and see, how are you envisioning kind of the future of the newsroom looking like from more of a technical side and developing? Like you're the first AI engineer. How do you see newsrooms evolving?
So when it comes to newsrooms, like I'm trying to ingrain, like I've said throughout this podcast, just like educating our reporters on like how to use it effectively. And I try to like tell them, I try to assuage their fears that like, you know, AI is not going to take your job. But I remind them that like they shouldn't be worried about that. They should be worried about like a reporter who knows how to use AI replacing them. So I think just it's vitally important to like learn how to use it, like using it as like a thinking aid, as I said earlier about using it for pre-mortems, but also using it as like a jumping off point when it comes to like when you're starting on a story, like asking it, you know, what type of people should I like talk to? Like what sort of sources should I be seeking out for the story? And then also like once you've written the story, like giving it like your write-up, I'm not asking it for clarity. So just like, I think for reporters, like traditional reporters, like it could be a very useful tool for their writing, not replacing the writing, but just like helping them improve their own writing. It's like ChatGPT is almost like an editor that never sleeps and never gets tired of you bothering them. So
I just had one last question in terms of like using all of these GPT technologies. How are you looking at the privacy risk? And have you been concerned and looking into that and kind of educating your journalists about it?
Yeah, no, like we've had long discussions at Hearst newspaper about like what we should and shouldn't like throw into these large language models. Like any stories that are unpublished, you shouldn't post plug into Producer P or tool or any of these other tools, especially if it has any sensitive information contained within it. We've seen like instances from, I think just last month with OpenAI, they had this like issue where people were seeing like other, like conversations from other people appearing in their timeline, or not their timeline, in their GPT interface. So it's, you know, just trying to inform reporters when they're using this, like, be careful. Don't be stupid. Don't share anything with it that you wouldn't share with like a person on the street.
Okay. And last words about kind of like, how has your journey been so far? 1 month in, I feel like it's your 30-day report into your job as an AI engineer. What's kept you so excited and keeping up with the whole AI journey at Hearst?
I think just like the impact that I'm already having, like honestly, for the first month, there's been a lot of focus on automation, not just the standard automation aspect of my job title, but the generative AI tool and the potential that it holds in there, like holds within of scaling up, not replacing, but scaling up all our work to help us punch above our weight in our newsrooms.
That's exciting. So thank you so much, Ryan, for coming on the podcast. This has been so insightful. I'm so excited to see you develop more innovative solutions for Hearst newspapers and really power that local journalism that you guys do. So thank you for taking the time and being here.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
That was Ryan Serpico, Hearst Newspaper's first AI and automation engineer. Subscribe to Newsroom Robots on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. This episode was made possible thanks to the Harvard Innovation Lab's Spark Grant. I'm Nikita Roy, and this is Newsroom Robots.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.